Welcome to Baderson. We make up stories, improvised and recorded live. We start each story by choosing a random phrase from a source of text. My name is Mike, and my source is Beastie Boys book by Michael Diamond and Adam Horovitz.
My name is Drew, and my book is Envisioning Information by Edward R. Tufte.
My name is Casey, and my book is The Science of Sound, second edition by Thomas D. Rossing.
My name is Ben, and my book is The Feynman Lectures on Physics by Richard Feynman.
Okay, now Drew's going to pick one of our names.
Mike.
That's me. Beastie Boys book. It's a fat one. Should I go from the beginning, the middle, or the end?
Middle.
Middle.
Middle. That's just the most random, right?
Highest variance.
He suggested that if we killed a rat and left it for dead. He suggested that if we killed a rat and left it for dead.
It was a motor speedway far out in the desert that didn't get a lot of traffic, but James had worked the confection stand for almost 20 years.
He'd started when he was a young guy in a cool leather jacket. He had a chain, a gold chain, just nothing on it, just gold. He still had the chain, but the jacket was long gone. He just had kind of a cut-off shirt, the arms cut off. Still worked the confection stand, said the same cheesy lines.
And when he started his job 20 years ago, he was in love with Charlene, who they went to school together and had a unique friendship. You know, he wasn't really friends with any other girls, but it felt really easy to talk to her. He thought it seemed easy for her to be with him. She didn't have to be the popular girl and act a different way. But she married Blake, has a kid.
She stopped working at the shoot-a-shot across the way. You know, it had been like 15 years probably since she'd worked there.
The gun range?
Yeah. You shot an actual shot of powder. Yeah, a shot glass full of powder, and it would explode in this exciting way when you got one.
He was pretty lonely. He enjoyed the socialization involved in working a public stand at the Speedway, and there'd be tons of people, but most of them were tourists from nearby towns or nearby counties. Not a lot of the local people turned out. It was a little too expensive for them, and he basically lived by himself and just was kind of sad.
Blake owned the Speedway, and most of the Speedway area where James worked was sort of grimy, carnival-esque. You know, there were games, concessions, but there was a kind of a relatively fancy restaurant that sat up by the up top of the above, just above the bleachers, right above the Speedway. And
it was fancy because it was surrounded in glass, and so nothing was dusty, but like literally everything else there was covered in dirt and dust from the arid landscape and the Speedway itself.
And by contrast, it was kind of gleaming, like it was really flat out on the desert out there, and like as the sun would set, it would catch the restaurant, and James would find himself looking at it a little bit wistfully, a little bit angrily.
And part of the wistfulness and the anger was that when Charlene married Blake, she left the Papa Shot booth and she became a server at the restaurant. And so she worked up there in the restaurant and didn't really come back down to the Midway like she used to.
He had a lot of jealousy for the people that dined in that restaurant and enjoyed the motorsports from their removed perch. And as the years wore on, he found himself getting a little angrier, a little more wistful for Charlene. He hadn't seen her in maybe 15 years. She stopped working as a server there. He didn't know if she came. Maybe she was one of the guests in the fancy gowns and kind of milling about with their cocktails. But he wasn't even sure if he'd recognize her if he saw her at this point. It had been so many years. But he missed her, and he had kind of created a mythological story about how maybe she still liked him, and maybe Blake was a jerk. And
if he could just get his own life together and impress her, then he could split them up. I mean, it sounded crass to say it, but in his mind, you know, it was romance. Like, she belonged with him, and he's having these thoughts. He's leaning against a concession stand and staring up at the gleaming restaurant, imagining her serving customers. And a tourist comes up, bald guy, hair on the sides. And he's like, "Man, I know this isn't really your job, but can you help me with this game over here? Like, I'm trying to win a toy for my kid. And I just can't figure it out. I've like spent $20 trying to shoot this water gun into the target." And he James is like, yeah, I could do that.
But he hesitated.
So he flips the sign.
Go ahead.
He puts the sign, a little sign on the counter that says "back in five." He follows the guy to the water squirter game.
Internally, James was conflicted. There was a serious code amongst all the different people that worked in the booths about, not blowing up each other's spot, not giving secrets away. So on his walk over to the water squirting game, James was trying to figure out how he'd sort of pretend to help the guy but not really give away any of the secrets, which James well knew, having spent so many years on the strip there. But the guy that ran the water squirt game was kind of a jerk, and this gentleman was pretty friendly, and it was kind of for a good cause, and so he was thinking it over.
So he pulls him up a little bit short of the water squirt game, and he turns us back to the water squirt game, and he says, "Look, don't I'm going to stop here, but I'll tell you what you got to do. Don't aim directly into the mouth. Okay, the sensor is about 3/4 of an inch above the mouth. They paint it all up and they shape it to get you to shoot into the mouth. You want to go just slightly high in the mouth.
You want to aim for the clown's left eye." Mm-hmm. That's the clown's left, not your left.
The arc of the water, the guns are all like curved. You know, they go a little bit left. So the guy's like, "Okay, wait, clown's left eye, the gun goes left again. Aim to your right a little bit and just about 3/4 of an inch high." And he breaks it all down for him.
And the guy does it and wins the prize. And his daughter watches him do it. And it's such a great moment. And James is back at the counter by then. And the guy comes back and he sees them walking by and they give a little wave. And then the guy says to his daughter, "Hang on a second, honey." And he comes over to James and he puts his hand on the counter and said, "You really saved me out there. Thanks a lot." And when he takes his hand away, there's a wad of cash there. And James notices it and then looks at the guy, and the guy winks and heads off with his daughter. And James picks it up and it's more than $1,000. He like lost count.
James is stunned for a minute, and just then his emotion just changes into pure elation and glee. Like he really needs the money, and he looks around him and thinks about his life and what he's done up until this point, and the confection stand and Charlene, and he's like, "You know what? Am I going to die running this confection booth? Am I going to die selling pieces of candy to jerk 12-year-olds for the rest of my life? Am I going to die doing that for the rest of my life?" And
am I going to die?
So he calls the guy at the water gun thing over. He says, Hey, Sammy, watch my station for a minute." And he just walks out, and you know, it's it's standard to have somebody else kind of watch your station for a minute, you know, and but he feels a little smug too, having left Sammy with two stations.
He feels slightly bad because he coached the guy to beat Sammy's game and then also stuck Sammy watching his station. So yeah, he felt a little twinge of guilt, but
a little he was twinge, over it. But Sammy was like Blake's like best friend, kind of yes man, and so back in the day, so he just thinks about that and it feels a little bit better.
He doesn't really know where he's going, and almost as if by automatic motion, he just finds his feet just kind of start walking out of the speedway, but then they kind of turn and he starts going up the stairs, and he suddenly realizes he's walking to the restaurant and he's going to sit down and have himself a fancy ass meal.
And he's thinking in his head the whole time, he's been thinking like, oh, I'll pay my rent and then I'll like fix up my bike, you know, and then I'll like maybe get in some classes or something. And
I'll get my hernia fixed.
Yeah. And you know, I'll do the,
I'll go to their culinary art school. I'll pay for my dad to get his hernia fixed.
I'll enroll in night school.
Yeah. I'll take cooking classes and, you know, all those things I've been meaning to do.
While that's going through his head, he's just ordering thing after thing, way more than he can ever eat. And it, and then they bring out all this food and he's kind of shocked, but he doesn't want to show that to anyone. Charlene is like, you work really worked up an appetite. And he says, he sure did.
He realizes he's looking at Charlene, who he hasn't seen in years. And she's not working there, but she is there. She's one of the you know, managers or you know, higher staff members there. And he kind of blinks at her and says, "Yeah, I'm hungry."
And she was sitting at the bar and had kind of turned around, and she has a drink in her hand and she kind of shakes it at him a little bit and drinks it and says, "It's good to see you, James. It's been a long time. How's
the?" And he invites her over and shares some of his food with her. And it's awkward at first. I mean, she's happy to do it. He feels awkward. He's embarrassed by all the food.
He's dusty. He's really dusty. He's in his work clothes.
They get back into the old rapport. It feels easy to talk again.
It's like no time has passed. Like they're joking, they're laughing, you know. They keep joking about how much food is there.
They talk a little bit about the old days, the high school days, but they're not just stuck in the past. They're talking about the shows they watch and the people that come through, the different types of people that eat at the restaurant versus stay down on the main line.
And it hasn't been... James is a little, he's kind of intoxicated by walking out on his job. He's intoxicated by having this windfall of money. And he just kind of feels like this conversation is going pretty well. And so, and he's had a little bit to drink. And he feels a little ambitious. And he says, "Look, Charlene, I'm going to level with you. I've never... stop thinking about you. I've missed you. I think you made a huge mistake marrying Blake. What do I have to do?"
And her mouth and eyes are both wide open as she hears this. And then her eyes go to her right. And James follows them and sees Blake standing there, hands on hips, with Sammy next to him. They heard the whole thing. And Blake says, "You walk out on your job and you talk to my wife like that, you're done, buddy." And he snaps his fingers, and the two security thugs, the only two that work there, Jack and Dave, both like thick sort of has-been MMA fighters, lift him right out of the booth.
They've been waiting all day for something like this.
And Sammy just keeps saying, "You're done, man. You're done, man."
"You're so done." And they don't have to, but they carry him all the way downstairs and toss him into the parking lot.
Now, James lives close to the speedway. He lives in an apartment. This is a little apartment building that was built for employees, and it's right on the other side of the speedway. And he goes home, and he feels he's a little distraught. He kind of lucked out because he didn't have to pay his bill, so he still got the $1,000.
But it just doesn't mean as much now.
And he lays in bed for a couple days. He makes an appointment to get his and his dad's hernias repaired. And but other than that, he just can't stop thinking about Charlene. And
when he had dropped this proposal on Charlene, she was shocked. She knew that Blake was there, but he felt like he could see something in her. She wasn't repulsed. She wasn't evidently bothered by the proposal in a way that just made him feel like maybe there was still a fingernail width ledge to hold on to there.
And so after 5 days, he counted out the remainder of his cash, $373. And he was like, I think that's enough to get an appetizer up there.
So and he crosses the street, and he's not dressed in his work clothes. He's not dusty. So he makes it all the way to the restaurant before Jack and Dave find him. No one had recognized him, but he gets that far. And then they do the same thing. They grab him, they carry him downstairs, and they toss him into the parking lot.
He was actually prepared for this. And he wanted them to carry him all the way down to the parking lot. And he had a taser on him. And he tased Jack and Dave repeatedly until they were unconscious.
He aimed at Jack's left eye, and the taser like arced perfectly and hit each of them right in the chest and shocked the shit out of them.
And he tased them over and over again until they were unconscious and stuck in the parking lot.
Tossed the taser in the trash can, dusted himself off, straightened his lapels, went back up the stairs like a proper gentleman, and walked into the restaurant. Sidled up to the bar, put a 20 on the bar, and said, give me something strong. The bartender said, right away, sir, and poured him a stiff drink, and he was kind of shaking it around like he'd seen Charlene do the other day, kind of stirring the ice around in his drink, and kind of just took in the lay of the land. Blake wasn't there. He didn't see Charlene. He had a magnificent view of the speedway through these giant windows, which are somehow always crystal clear, even though dust was everywhere outside.
And if it looked gleaming from the outside, it felt even better from the inside. It's like the sun would refract through the windows and make you look and feel like a golden boy.
And Blake comes up to him at the bar and is like, hey, I told you never to come back. I told you you were fired, and I told you never to come back here. And James, feeling the success of how he dispatched with Jack and Dave, and just feel and he'd had a little bit to drink again. And
the sun is just so cozy, and he's gold. He's a golden boy.
He's just feeling it himself, and he turns to Blake and he's like, look, Blake, we've never liked each other. I think we both know that. We don't need to pretend. But I'll tell you what. Why don't you just let me marry Charlene and let me take over the speedway here, and let's just let bygones be bygones, and I'll just take it from here.
And Blake laughs.
And Blake's eyes flicker over James' shoulder. And James turns around to see what he's looking at. And Charlene's there with her hands on her hips. And she says, I'm not a trophy for you guys to fight over. And, you know, the winner gets to take me home. You make me sick, both of you. And she left. And Blake said, you lose again, to James. And James felt like crap.
And Blake turns around and just like turns his back to him and walks away. And as James is passing out, he notices that the cash register of the bar is open. And so he just reaches in and grabs all the cash out of the cash register and leaves the restaurant.
And he walks down, and instead of going to his house, he walks into the fairgrounds that are still open for another hour, and he just starts playing the games, and he just starts winning and taking like every prize he can. He plays them over and over and over again until he's just hauling around this giant cart full of like stuffed animals.
He eventually makes it to his old confection booth, and there's like a 17-year-old with a wispy goatee working the confections, and he walks up and says, starts asking some technical questions about the candy. The kid has no idea how to answer it. He says, "I'll tell you what," and he throws $200 in cash from the cash register on the thing. He's like, "Just give me a gumball and keep the change."
And the kid gives him a gumball, and James leaves with his. He had to get. They have. He went and got a wheeled cart to take all of his winnings, all the carnival prize winnings that he had gathered, and drags them all back to his place. And he counts up his money. He's got $1,250 now. Even everything he stole out of the register, and even after spending it all on games and the gumball and all that.
The hernia thing actually went south. They gave him another hernia by accident, so they gave him a bunch of money just to avoid getting sued.
A big settlement, and so what he didn't realize was that like the Speedway was a total house of cards financially, and him going around and winning all the carnival games and taking all those prizes, that was the straw that broke the camel's back on the finances of the Speedway, and the Speedway went out of business.
And the money in the register was that was actually all of the operating cash in the restaurant.
So the whole business collapses. Blake had
been embezzling from the place for the last 10 years, and there were no reserves.
And their marriage splintered apart because he just turned into a wreck. You know, he was never really a nice guy, but it just got much worse, and Charlene divorced him.
And with his hernia settlement money, James was actually able to purchase the Speedway because he got this big medical malpractice settlement. And so he bought the Speedway and reopened it. And
at first he was hanging out at the restaurant a lot. But every day we'd kind of wander down to the fair and look at the games. And then one day he went up to the shoot a shot, and he said to the kid who was working, he's like, "Hey, take a break, take an hour or so. I want to run this one."
And he was sitting there, and he was never very good at the shoot a shot, and he was missing a bunch. He could never get it, and he just was firing shot after shot after shot, and starting to get frustrated. And then all of a sudden, he heard a voice behind him that said, "Hey, you need a tip on that? How to play that one?" And sure enough, he turned around. It was Charlene.
He hadn't seen her. I mean, this is years that had passed, and she had a different haircut and no jewelry, and kind of had a different like aura. Like she was wearing different kinds of clothes, and he broke into a smile, and they hugged, and he said, "Can I get you like a lollipop or something?" And they went to the confection stand, talked the whole way, and they had a great talk. They spent the whole afternoon. The place closed down, the people left. And then they finally, like, they were kind of dancing around the personal stuff, but now they were the only ones there. The sun just recently set, and a amber glow still cast there on the horizon. And they could both feel now that subject was just hanging in the air between them. And they started talking at the same time. And Charlene said, just no, I want to go first. That's okay. You were my best friend, and I don't think I ever told you that. So I feel like I messed up. I feel like I married the wrong person for me. Blake was never right for me. That's another mistake. I'm still figuring a lot out. Maybe you are too. And James said, yeah, definitely. And she said, this was really fun. And, you know, when you stole all that money and
tased those guys
and wrecked the business and broke up my marriage, that's just what I needed to change some things. And I'm really happy now. And I want to thank you for that. And they hugged. And James was holding on to a question or a profession of love. But he kept it. He kept it inside. He didn't say it.
And so they parted, and he continued running the speedway. He'd often get pretty drunk up in the restaurant, looking out over the track. And Charlene didn't stay in touch. And as he aged, as he became infirm, he regretted until his dying breath that he never quite found what he was looking for.
The end. Baiters and Stories are improvised and recorded live over the internet. We clean up the audio, but we don't edit, rehearse, or redo any content, for better or worse. Subscribe and find other stuff we do at baiterson.com. And remember, if you leave a story untold, you leave your love unblossomed.